Welcome to Heart, a podcast about all things heart-related, presented by the physicians of Advanced Cardiovascular Specialist. I'm your host, Carl Pendley, and our hope for Heart to Heart is to meet you where you are with valuable information from trusted experts in the field of cardiology. And today, we're pleased to have join us Dr. Trey Baucom of Advanced Cardiovascular Specialist located in Shreveport, Louisiana. Dr. Baucom, thanks again for being with us.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk today about something that people probably don't put together in their thought. They don't correlate this, but mental health and heart disease. Okay, if I'm feeling down, I'm feeling depressed, I feel, you know, seeing a therapist. If I'm suffering heart issues, I'm going to feel that. I come see somebody such as you. But how does one relate to the other? Do they feed off one another? Is it a two-way street?
Well, there's two different aspects of it, sort of on both sides of the issue. And I will tell a story. Early in my career, I had a patient undergo bypass surgery. And initially, he had a bit of a rocky course as far as not feeling well, you know, not doing too well in rehab. And then all of a sudden, he sort of turned the corner. And I'll never forget seeing him in my office with his wife. And he seemed much more upbeat than he had been seeming. He seemed like he was excited. He was finally rounding the bend. He was going to make it. Everything was going to be good. And he went home that night and killed himself. And I found out later, his wife came and told me that, you know, he was hiding his depression from me and that, you know, she didn't expect him to kill himself, but he had been severely depressed post-bypass and just tried to hide it from me. And it caught me so off guard. I really did look into it and made it an aspect of my care. And I jokingly tell people that depression is so common after bypass that 50% of the people get it and the other 50% are lying about it. It's not quite that bad. I think they estimate the true incidence as 20%, but it is fully 20%. We think that when people undergo bypass surgery, it really does have a direct depleting effect of the serotonin level in their brain and that they get a reactive depression after going on the heart-lung machine. But it can't be all of that because we often see it in people that have just had an angioplasty or a stent placed or even a small heart attack or even the first time they're told that they have heart disease, even if they don't have to have any kind of an intervention. So there's more to it than just the heart-lung machine. It seems to be a little bit more prevalent in men, although both men and women get it. With men, a lot of times it's their first brush with mortality, and I think it makes them question their life and it often will send them into a depression. And so there's a huge correlation between people that get heart disease and then subsequently get depression. And just before we go into that anymore, on the other hand, if you look at it the other way, people that have depression tend to have more heart disease.
Higher stress. Is it that simple?
It's even more physiologic than that. People that have depression have stickier platelets. They're more likely to have a heart attack because their platelets are activated. They have higher inflammatory markers. And then, of course, there are the obvious ones that people that are depressed tend to smoke and drink more, which puts a strain on their heart. Their blood pressure tends to be higher. And so depression can bring on heart disease, and heart disease can bring on depression.
The heart disease bringing on depression, you mentioned some physiological factors there and chemical factors. And can we go into that a little bit deeper? Say, I've had heart bypass surgery. You say, either I'm feeling depressed or I'm lying that I'm not. So what's that doing to me physiologically to my body and my brain that could alter one thing or another?
So getting, you know, on the serotonin level, what we found as far as the macro physiology is that people that get depressed post-pump, and we even call it post-pump depression, they do worse in rehab, they're less motivated, their recovery time takes longer, they're less likely to make a full recovery. All the things we don't want. After bypass surgery, as you know, we want people to get back, we have a full life, do whatever they did before, feel much better.
And I mean, depression. That's the object of the exercise. That's why you do it to begin with.
Exactly. It's big surgery. You want a big reward. And so the good news is that these medicines, these serotonin uptake inhibitors, and there are a bunch of them, all different sort of classes of them, But serotonin uptake inhibitors are very effective at treating post-pump depression, post-cardiovascular illness depression. They mediate serotonin in your brain, and so they tend to raise the level of serotonin back up. Most people that have depression after a cardiovascular illness do not need lifelong therapy. A lot of times we'll treat them for 6 months, and then if they want to, we'll wean them off the treatment, and a lot of them do fine. A lot of them, it's even shorter than that. But I've found that if you don't treat them, of course, there's always the risk of suicide being the worst scenario, but it will slow down their rehab. If they'll acknowledge it and accept treatment, which most do, and when we explain it to them this way, it really makes them do better in rehab. It makes them feel better. A lot of the emotional lability that people get after a cardiovascular illness, either a heart attack or bypass. I mean, a lot of people come in and say, I can't quit crying. You know, a commercial on television will make me burst into tears, or I'm angry at my spouse for no reason. And a lot of times that is a sign of depression, and that they do very well with antidepressants.
Which is increasing serotonin.
Yeah, that's mainly what we use. And, unfortunately, psychiatric care in the United States has kind of taken a hit over the past few decades, and there are very few psychiatrists, and it would be nice to be able to involve them in this care, but we couldn't wait on that any longer. So most cardiologists feel comfortable prescribing serotonin uptake inhibitors, and we actually use them for several things in cardiology. So we're familiar with them. That's what we use.
Let's work in the reverse now. How does the depression work on the heart? You touched lightly on some factors. Let's dig a little deeper in there, that someone who has a mental illness, they're getting treatment for it, but it's having an effect on their physical well-being, specifically their heart and vascular system.
Absolutely. And so, like I said, it makes you more at risk to have a heart attack because your platelets are activated, you have increased inflammation in your body.
So physically you change, not just mentally, but it's creating physical changes in your body.
Mental changes lead to physical changes, absolutely. And then you add to that, you think about what it takes to overcome having heart disease. So you find out you have heart disease and your doctor says, you need to now eat better, eat these things, exercise more, stop smoking. And nicotine, unfortunately, is an antidepressant. And so people who are depressed do not want to stop smoking. And when you're depressed, you lack motivation. You say, well, that's just hopeless. I can never change. I mean, I'm 100 pounds overweight. I'm never going to be able to get better. And depression makes that worse. That hopelessness doesn't let people do what they need to do, which is say, all right, I've got heart disease. I'm going to beat this thing. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to eat right. I'm going to lower my blood pressure. I'm going to lower my hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of your glucose. So we need the patient to be motivated to help us treat them with their heart disease. And they can't do that if they're depressed.
If you have heart disease, you're aware of it. We know what to do there. We go see a cardiologist, someone such as you. How do we know if that is triggering any depression? What do we do about that?
Well, you do have to depend on your physician's help. And, we don't really use, or I don't really use, formal questionnaires and things like that, which are useful tools. And a lot of studies talk about that. It's mainly just my feeling about the patient. You can usually get an idea, unless they're really hiding it from you, like the patient I discussed, you can really get an idea of whether or not someone's depressed. For one thing, they have a phenomenon called anhedonia. And anhedonia means they no longer enjoy the things they used to enjoy. And so when they or their spouse says, well, he doesn't want to fish anymore. He doesn't even talk about golf anymore. He doesn't want to do X or Y anymore. A lot of times that's a sign that they're depressed. Weight gain or weight loss can be signs. So eating changes can be signs of depression. Excessive fatigue. I want to sleep all the time. I mean, a lot of these are clues that perhaps your patient is depressed and you need to address that straight on and talk to them about it and say, and then a lot of times they're relieved when you bring it up. Not always, sometimes they're angry, but a lot of times they're relieved to say, do you think maybe you're depressed? And they'll, a lot of times, are happy that you brought it up because they want to talk about it. And then they usually say, this is unlike me. I don't know what's wrong with me. And then I tell them, it's the surgery or it's the heart attack. It's not you. and we can treat it and you'll get better. And they usually are relieved by that.
So you can treat it physically. We know that. Do you recommend that they then seek therapy as further treatment on, or do you just treat the medical part of it, medicine part of it?
We mainly treat the medical part of it. Unfortunately,
but you recommend
absolutely. And of course, you know, cardiac rehab kills a couple of birds with one stone in the sense that physical activity increases your endorphins and enkephalins, and those are antidepressants. Plus, when you're in cardiac rehab, there's esprit de corps. Everybody in the room's had bypass. Everybody in the room's in the same boat as you, and it makes you feel less isolated. So physical exercise and the camaraderie of rehab help a lot of people indirectly, even though they're not in there talking about their depression and stuff. And then a lot of people, therapy helps them directly. And then, of course, there are professional therapists they can go to, or their minister or priest, or they can talk to me or their spouse. Definitely therapy is a part of it.
That gate swings both ways. Would you encourage therapists to inquire about their patients' physical cardiological condition?
You know, we do. We try to work with them directly. But like I said, it's unfortunately, healthcare in the United States has taken a beating and there's less available to people now. So that a lot of the burden has fallen more on us and on primary care doctors.
Okay, we've talked about the two-way street. They are related, but life in the time of COVID changes everything. Has the COVID virus and our response to it had an effect that you can see in your cardiology patients related to their mental health?
Yes, in a couple of different ways, both directly. Of course, COVID can affect your heart, and a lot of people have that phenomenon and worry about that phenomenon. COVID causes fatigue and shortness of breath and exercise intolerance, which I think leads to depression in some people because they can't do what they used to do and they get depressed about that and they get frustrated about that. And it makes them want to give up exercising, which in turn puts them at risk for worse cardiovascular outcomes. I think that the environment that we live in now, the socioeconomic environment of the lockdown and, you know, people worrying about finances and stuff has led to more depression, which leads to more heart disease. But also the practical consideration of one of the main ways we diagnose depression is through the spouse. And so we see an interesting reflection of the patient in the spouse. So I often pick up a lot of clues. I can see how worried a spouse is about their loved one. And a lot of times, if it's not explained by the physical condition, that'll allow us to open up the conversation. Is there something else going on? Is something else I don't know about? I mean, tell me. And, you know, like, well, you know, I'm glad you said it because he wants to sleep all the time or he's not himself. And during the COVID restrictions, the spouses weren't allowed in the room anymore.
So they could see what's going on.
Yeah. And so the patient, a lot of times, will sort of bluff their way through it. They don't want to talk about it or they don't want to waste my time. I hear that a lot. You're not a psychiatrist. I don't want to bother you with this. And if the spouse isn't there, it's more likely that the patient won't get treated because I can't talk to the spouse or the spouse can't open that conversation up to me. And that restriction has gotten better now. A lot more spouses are allowed in the rooms. So I hope we do not go back to that restriction again, because I do think it hurt patient care.
And we want to be sure not to limit it to spouses alone, because some people might have an independent caregiver, somebody who doesn't have a spouse, but someone comes in and looks in on them. What should spouse, caregiver, anyone that is associated with the heart patient, what should they be looking for to see if perhaps something's going on mentally as well?
That's a good point. I shouldn't have limited that, because it is. It's a caregiver, a friend. It's anyone that sees that person routinely in a more natural setting than the doctor's office. So this is someone that sees their friend every day, their sibling, their daughter, their mother every day or every week, and they've noticed a mental change in them. They've noticed something that they can't put their finger on or that has concerned them, and they should bring that up. And either with us, if it's coincides with cardiovascular disease, or with their primary care doctor, but they should definitely bring it up. And that's a good point. It's not necessarily the spouse, but someone that sees them routinely and now is concerned about this, and particularly if they've recently had a cardiovascular event, heart attack, stent, bypass, and they notice this change, whoever it is, even if it's a neighbor, they should mention it.
Well, we all wear masks in different situations, and your patients are wearing the mask of a recovering patient when they come to see you, but when they leave your office and go home, the mask comes off, and that's when the others can actually see what's really going on. Like you say, you're 50% happy, the other 50% deny it too, and we want to eliminate that 50% of denial so we can get to the issue and get it overcome.
Yeah, it definitely helps to have a loved one of some sort there to help us make that diagnosis so we can treat them.
Dr. Baucom, thanks again for your time and expertise. This has been a fascinating topic, the correlation between your heart health and your mental health. Be mindful of both. And remember, to learn more about ACS and to schedule a consultation, visit acsdoctors.com, or you can phone 318-798-9400.